Well, I want to welcome you. Thank you for coming in this afternoon. I know 3:30 in the afternoon is the prime time for you to be up and alive and awake and ready to go. So I appreciate you being here. I want to introduce Walter Sedacki. He is a professor at Lipscomb University. Walter and I were actually in youth ministry together for 7 or 8 years while he was here at University of Malibu. Then he took off up north to be in the Bay Area for a while before really exiting to head to Nashville. And he's been there for 10 years?
Seven.
Roughly 10 years, minus give or take three. I'm Jack Williamson. I'm from the Conejo Valley Church of Christ in Thousand Oaks, and I'm just here today to introduce Walter and open with a prayer, and then tomorrow I'll be doing some sharing as we move on through this series, and Friday Walter will come back in again. So let me open with a prayer, and then I'll turn it over to Walter. Father God, we thank you so much for the many ways that you have drawn us all into ministry. And Lord, we know that you're not worried about social media or what's going on online, and you were there before it was created, and you have given us the lives that we have now. Father, help us to be a blessing to each other, and I pray that you bless Walter now to be a blessing to glorify you and to enlighten all of us on how to better connect with our kids. Through Jesus we pray. Amen.
Thank you, Jack. It's a joy to be here, but if I'm going to be completely honest, I have no idea where I am, right? You're like me. You punch a bunch of coordinates into a box like this. You follow this disembodied voice while she told you to turn left here, turn right here, make a U-turn dummy over and over to get you to where you are. Well, I did go to school here, so I didn't know how to get here. But this is where I find myself most times in life, right? Where I figure out, how in the world did I get here? And I think the same is true when it comes to technology. We've invited these devices that I see all over this room into our lives. And then one day we're just like, how in the world did we get here? And then if you're like me and you're at dinner with your two adolescent daughters and everybody's on their smartphone spending time together, you're asking yourself, how in the world did we get here? What I want to do during this session is give us a framework to perhaps address some of these questions theologically, because I think this is one of those areas where the church has yet to catch up to its theology when it comes to technology. And some of you, as parents in this room, are probably saying, you know, how old should my son or daughter be before they get fill in the technology, right? Is it, how much is too much when it comes to the time they spend on? And so hopefully I'll give you a framework to address some of these nagging questions. I grew up in Northwest Houston in 1980-something, and social networking, when I was in high school, revolved around me piling into my 1972 Beetle, driving down to Willowbrook Mall in Northwest Houston, sitting in the food court, and just waiting for people to come by and say, hey, how you doing? I mean, that's how we kind of navigated social networking back then. It was place dependent. It depended on my ability to have the freedom to travel and the ability and the means to travel with. Unfortunately, I had this broken down Beetle that worked 72% of the time. But my daughter can sit in the comfort of her room with a little 4-inch screen and be connected socially to her friends. Now, disclaimer as I get started is I am not a Luddite. I'm not going to be here to say, let's throw out our technology. I've got an iPhone and an iPad and an iEverything except an iWatch. Because isn't it interesting, just side note here, that 10 years ago with the invention of the iPhone, Apple said, you don't need a watch. And here we are 10 years later saying, you know what, you need a watch now and it's going to cost you $500. Sorry for the soapbox. Well, Dana Boyd says this, the spaces may have changed, but what hasn't changed are the organizing principles. Some teens still congregate at malls and football games, but the induction of social media does alter the landscape. It enables you to create cool space without physically transporting themselves anywhere. Social media has become an important public space where teens can gather, socialize broadly with peers in an informal way, which is what we did in the food court, right? But these networks these network technologies, let's see if I can get that to come up, formed through network publics, formed through technology, serve the same function like the mall and the park did for generations. What it's done is it's helped teens see themselves as a broader community. And that's vitally important when we get into looking at some of the social and spiritual needs that we're going to see technology address in the lives of adolescents. First, what I want you to do is turn with two or three people around you and answer this question. What do you see teens doing with technology that when you were 14, 13, 16, had no idea could ever have been possible, that you see them doing now that you could never have seen possible? Take about 97 seconds on your mark, get set, go.
Does anyone need a handout?
All right, well, let's hear from a couple of your groups. That was exactly 97 seconds. Let's hear from back there. One of the things you see teens doing with technology. Yeah, I'm pointing to you.
You're talking about them taking pictures and not realizing the immaturity that they're exposing themselves physically out there.
So we're talking about those Hoochie Mama and those Abercrombie abs. Yeah, photos out there. Yeah, good. What else? Not good, but, you know. Jacob, how about you?
We talked about, I'm going to steal his answer, they are sharing experiences and images instantly.
Yeah, instant experience. I remember, you know, my wife, when our daughters were this tall and this tall and they were doing performances and recitals and all those wonderful things, she's pinching me, make sure you get this, you know, and I'm just like, I just want to enjoy it. But it doesn't seem to be an experience unless we can document it, right? Mm-hmm. Something else, how about over here?
That's kind of what we said. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, and also they're verifying whatever you're teaching and saying. They're looking immediately to see if it's right.
Yeah. So those of you who are teachers, you have to really know your stuff now. Yeah, they are growing up connected more than ever to information and to people and to groups in such a way that you can never do that before. Yeah, Amy.
I just think they have a feeling that they can be a whole bunch of places at once.
Yes.
Like they're not limited by space.
Right, and multitasking is now a virtue. Right. And we'll get to some of that. Quick warning, I am going to go through a lot of information in a short amount of time. It's going to be like we're drinking out of a fire hose. For this, I don't apologize because I cut down the length of the class times since I was here last. So, sorry about that. But I do have thumbnails and the copies of the handouts. You'll see those links on the back of the handouts. So, you don't have to worry about getting every kind of word down. What we do see, and you know, we've seen this term of digital natives. These kids seem like they're growing up in the womb, right? Connected. It's like, mom keeps tagging me in these pics from my embryo phase. It's so embarrassing. And the twins going, dude, man, you got to manage your privacy setting. But the problem is, what this assumes is that our children know everything when it comes to technology, and we have nothing to offer. And that's one of the things that I want to bring to you and hopefully equip you with is some tools and some language and some ideas to bring to the table so that you can live in a world with the digital natives. I want to share with you this quote. about a certain technology, because we have always had technology with you. It says it has turned, it's done more than diplomats, clergy, or scientists to knit the world together. Taken for granted, it's an indispensable companion that serves without favor or prejudice. It's reached into every civilized corner of the world and often brought civilization with it. From its spring, the words of history in the making, the chatter of daily life, it's been called the proudest and most poetical achievement of the American people. Millions use it to get the weather, correct time, shopping, stock market, recorded prayers, even advice contemplating suicide. Teenagers can hardly live without it, and many parents can hardly live with it. Twisted into every position, so long as it's uncomfortable, teenagers keep the busy signals going with deadless conversation. What are you doing? Yeah, some today. Yeah, I think he likes me. Wait, I'll change ears. What? Hold on. What are they talking about here? Yeah, telephone. Look at the year. Time Magazine, 1959. So really what we're talking about is nothing new when it comes to this idea of technology. Teenagers have always taken technology and used it for something to further their own needs and their own social needs. So, again, the technology may be new, but the needs and the spiritual needs that teens have are not new. They still have the need to understand who am I and develop their identity. So we see teens curating their identities online, putting their best possible face forward there. So they can say, this is who I am. Never do you see a person putting up there, yep, just ate a stalk of celery, you know, doing laundry. We don't see that. Okay, we all have one friend who does that, the oversharer, right? But they're also needing to know where do they fit. And so these connections they have give them this sense of belonging. And they want to know if their choices matter. And sometimes this autonomy that we give them by having kind of anonymity or a large audience behind a screen of thinking, I'm only talking to these two or three people as I text something out, test that autonomy and their choices of whether or not they matter. Our popular concerns, though, with technology is the persistence and the visibility and the spreadability and the searchability. We know these things, you know. If you put something out there, it's going to stay there. If you put something out there, thousands or millions or perhaps a billion people will see that. And how quickly, if I accidentally send, how quickly that can get forwarded to others out there. So those are some of those concerns that we have, and rightly so. But I want to talk to you more importantly about what then are teens taking from technology. Because I don't want to throw technology out with the bathwater. I want us to kind of see, are there some spiritual needs technology's addressing that we need to pay attention to and perhaps ask, how can we address those better? So, first and foremost, I see that technology is one of the ways that teens are searching for intimacy. They are trying to connect with others who know what it's like to be me. Like I said, I grew up in Northwest Houston in 1980-something, and if there was such thing as a goth at the time, right, you would have been the only goth at my school, right? Because we were a bunch of preppies with our popped collars and our little alligators on our chests. And if you came in dressed as all black, you didn't fit in. And technology lets you get connected with all sorts of people who know what it's like to be me. And this is spiritual at its core, because God created man, said it's not good for humanity to be alone. Kendra Dean puts it this way. She says, intimacy represents the deeply spiritual search for another who knows what it's like to be me. So, they're also searching for entertainment. They want to connect with something outside of themselves, to be taken beyond themselves, to find mystery and wonder and adventure and a quest, to do something of significance. And at its core, this is sacramental. They want to be able to answer those bigger questions of life. And if you look at some of the research, and one of the things we do know, that teens need to find outlets to be able to address those doubts and those questions and those tough issues of life. issues of same-sex attraction. What's the church supposed to do with those? Issues of justice and mercy that we're seeing in Ferguson and with the cases in the news recently. And if our church is a place where we're saying, you know what, we don't talk about those kinds of things here, they want to connect with something bigger than themselves. Something out. They need answers to that mystery and that wonder. So they'll just Google it. But again, this is deeply spiritual at its core. And thirdly, they're looking for participation. They want to be involved in creating something bigger than themselves. We tell them, you're special. We give everyone a trophy, right? And then they come into church, right? And we say, you're part of a farm team. How do you say that, Walter? Well, we use this language. We love our church. We love our youth. They are the church of the... And that's heresy. It's heresy. If you ever say that, I'm going to grab you by the ear, take you out, and smack you, like my grandma would. Because that's saying, you know what, you don't count yet. So they've got forums like Instagram, Twitter, where they can get hundreds upon hundreds of followers. And so they can gain a sense of significance there. My argument is when we look at all three of these, and well, this is spiritual at its core because it's vocational. When they post something to Instagram or Facebook or YouTube, they can say, you know what? Well, first of all, they don't post anything to Facebook because all of us are on Facebook. But Instagram, they can say, I am part of Instagram. Now, my argument is each one of these can only somewhat be realized with technology. I think they're adequate, perhaps at best, substitutes for these quests are answered by technology. I think these quests are best answered in the life of Christian community. So, if we're getting students opportunities to truly participate in the body of Christ, not just a part of the body of Christ. If we're inviting investigation into the deep mystery and wonder of faith in our faith communities and not being afraid to answer some of the more difficult questions of faith. Or if we just simply talk with the students in our faith communities, perhaps we're going to be able to substitute in a much better way what technology is trying to do for them. So, like I said, I think this is best done in the Christian faith, and it meets those all, I think, better. So, what I want to do now is just give you a quick framework of a theology that I think you as moms or aunts and uncles can do when it comes to navigating technology. The first one is this idea of being fully present. We see in John 1, the Word came flesh, made His dwelling among us, and we have seen His glory, the glory of the one and only Father. We see God present Himself in such a way that He is fully present with His people in such a way that is undeniable. I want you to watch this commercial that was popular about a year ago. And pay attention to everything in life that these people are missing out on.
To save us from our phones. New Windows.
To which I want to say, really? A phone to save us from our phone? This is a picture from the 2009 inauguration, right? Look at the first family, all fully, wonderfully engaged. 4 years later, check this out.
Wow. This is the inauguration of the President of the United States.
And they're tweeting about it. We've all been with someone who's been there but hasn't been there, and perhaps we've all been there but without being there, and all our kids, our students, our children can call us on it. There was a season in my life where my name was Dad, because it took me 2 times calling my name to actually get my attention off of the screen. So, being fully present. There's this idea of keeping a text Sabbath and making it holy, set apart. So, the writer of Ecclesiastes says there's a time for everything, a season for every activity under heaven, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to uproot, a time to text and make calls, a time to power down electronic devices and just be. It's there in the Hebrew. I checked that with some of our Old Testament scholars. If you have your portable device, locate the power button. Now, if you're not aware of what the power button is, it's the least used button on your device. So it's the one that's the shiniest. So do this. Come on, take it out and power it down. Now, if you're an iPhone user like me, they make it really hard. You got to hold it for what seems like forever, like 2.5 seconds. And then you slide to power off. Some of you are shaking. It's okay. It's going to be all right. Let's power it off. Just 25 minutes is all we have left. You can do it. You can do 25 minutes. Just have this idea. Do we have times in our days, in our weeks, where we take Sabbath from being connected to absolutely everything else? Could it be that we need perhaps just an hour a day where we can take a daily Sabbath where we do that? We have a rule in our home that we charge all our devices downstairs. We sleep upstairs. And so we want to get good sleep throughout the night. I had a mom once when I was in youth ministry about 5 years ago, says, I'm sick and tired of my kid getting woken up in the middle of the night because her friends keep texting her. And I was like, well, why don't you have her charge her device in the kitchen? And the mom said, well, she uses her phone as an alarm clock. And I'm like, if only there was this magical box you could purchase that would make a noise a certain amount of time. I mean, she did graduate Harding, so I won't hold it too far against her. I am just kidding. Lipscomb pays me to say that. No. So, perhaps maybe could we develop a tech Sabbath? Could we have a 24-hour period each week that we could work up to for some of us? That we would have a time. So now, I teach at Lipscomb. I teach youth and family ministry. And now on all my syllabi, I have, if you email me after 5 o'clock on Friday, you're not going to get a response until Monday. Because I take Sabbath seriously. You know, the times when I haven't have been those times when I've chosen to take a look and peek at my email, like on the 4th of July this year. And I popped open my email, and there's an email from one of my superiors. I won't throw him or her under the bus, talking about all this stuff. And I'm like, oh. And my wife was like, Walter, it's your fault. You are the one who broke your Sabbath. He didn't break, or she didn't break your Sabbath for you. Or let's develop sacred spaces for a community. Right? Exodus 3, God spoke to Moses, said, don't come any closer, turn your phone off, because the place where you're standing is holy ground. Barbara Brown Taylor makes this really interesting observation. I think it's her. I have to go back and check my reference. Where she says, perhaps the reason why Moses finally, God speaks to Moses is because he finally stops long enough to realize what's going on with the bush is unusual. See, if it were me, I would have passed by it so many times doing this while I passed by it, right? If you look at passing periods on our campus, this is what it looks like. We spend thousands of dollars on flowers a year on our campus that go unnoticed. Do we have sacred spaces? Where are the places that technology isn't allowed in your home? So when I was growing up, If the phone rang, what did mom say? Let it ring. This is family time. This is holy. This is sacred. Now our new practice when we go out to eat is we leave our phones in the car. Because as we gather around the table, that's a sacred space for us. My daughters are going to be like, how do I Instagram my meal? How are people going to know what I eat? I'm like, it's okay. You can tweet about it later. Like I've already said, our bedrooms aren't places where we allow technology at night. The first thing I want to reach for in the morning is not my iPhone, it's my wife. So maybe these are some practices that we might find helpful. Online doesn't mean disconnected for others. There are others affected by our online behavior. And this is one of the things a lot of adolescents get in some level, and sometimes they blow it in some really big ways. Jesus says, I do not resist an evil person. If someone strikes you on the right cheek with a snapshot, flame them online via Twitter. My wife has accused me of this. There have been times when I send tweets where I'm addressing the tweet to three people that will get it. And the other couple hundred followers or whatever that I have either may have no idea what I'm talking about or are able to read that in a completely unintended way. And I come off looking like either a jerk or a fool or an idiot. And so those are some of those ways that we've got to realize my participation in this broader community comes with some responsibilities. This also goes under the lines of some stuff we'll talk about on Friday when it comes to file sharing and peer-to-peer downloading of movies and music and those kinds of things where students feel free to kind of download stuff illegally because it's not going to affect anyone. These are just multi-million dollar corporations with one more download. We've got to realize, no, we are participants in a broader community. I have a life group where two of the members of my life group are songwriters in the Nashville community, pretty accomplished songwriters, but their income is solely dependent on the sales of music. So, those are just two quick examples. And then we've got to stop keeping up with the Joneses. We are sold this line that we have to have the latest and greatest to have any kind of value. Here's a Best Buy commercial that describes this wonderfully.
It is the newest.
Even newer.
Oh, everything else is obsolete.
I just got this one.
Oh, 4D TV? Stupid.
You got the wrong TV, silly head.
The new buyback program. You buy it now, we buy it back when the new thing comes out.
So we've got to realize just because everybody on the face of the earth has something. I mean, my daughter was, by her admission, the last person in the United States of America to have a cell phone, which is not necessarily true. See, technology ought to serve humanity. Humanity was not created to serve technology. And again, I am a fanboy when it comes to Apple products. I have to confess I have camped out for a phone or three. Not the night before. I'm not that big of a loser. But I have gotten up at 5 o'clock in the morning. And I have to stop and ask myself, wait, who's serving who here? And we have to, just test everything. And we have to hold on to the good. I love this passage. First of all, it's one of the easiest memory verses out there. But secondly, because it says something, we have to say, okay, before we let this in, we've got to ask, is this good? Is this something we ought to invite into us, into our home, and into our lives, and into our family? And then here's an area that I think there's a lot of work we need to deal with, and talk about a theology of friend, because friend has been hijacked by Facebook from something that requires intimate, face-to-face, in life, time together, to somebody I met once in line at Coachella. We have to come back with a better, deeper definition of what friend is. This is there's this Walmart commercial is a beautiful two-edged sword. On one side, it shows the beauty that of the potential community that's available through technology, but I think it also reveals what perhaps we have done with the idea of friends.
The holidays are here again, so I'm inviting all my friends, the people who are close to me. They're my extended family. You've got my mom, my sister, my brother, my surprisingly cool stepmother, and the two kids that she had before she ever met my dad. Next, you've got my aunts and cousins. They showed up with several dozen friends of theirs. It's fine with me. I've got enough for all. Here in the hall, you've got my office mates, my best friend, and his online date. They've all come here to celebrate. This is my family. My judo coach, my allergist, my MySpace friends and Twitter list, and the first girl that I ever kissed. You're beautiful. I love you. Cause there's one truth I have found, and it's never let me down. When you stock up on joy, there's enough to go around. Singing joy. Enough to go around. Enough to go around and around and around and around. Singing joy. Enough to go around.
So again, there's this two-edged sword there that we see. There's something beautiful about the expansion of love in our world, but then there's something about, well, is that really people who are part of our family? I don't know, and that's why I think there needs to be some more work along those lines. Sherry Turkle has a really great book, but she also has an even better TED Talk, and it's part of the links that you'll see that I referred to, where she says, we've expecting more technology and less from each other when it comes to that. She was asked by Stephen Colbert, he asked, you know, when we get 30 different text messages from somebody, don't all those little sips equal one big gulp? And she's like, no, they don't. I mean, since I'm away from my wife right now, I would much rather be face-to-face with her. I wish she was here, right? But since she's not here, later when I'm back in my dorm, I'm going to Facebook or FaceTime her, right? So I can see her face. That's not as good as being face-to-face with her. I can't reach out to my screen and hug and kiss her. It'll crack the screen and just be gross, right? But that's better than me simply talking to her on the phone, right? Because I can see her. And I'd rather talk to her on the phone than simply just text her. So we've got to realize there are just some of those limitations that we allow to substitute for the deeper, intimate spaces of our life. And then this is the interesting thing that's coming into the popular research out there, is this idea of learning how to be alone. Is getting out and realizing there's times when I need to put my device away, be alone, and just sit. Louis C.K. puts it this way.
The thing is, you need to build an ability to just be yourself and not be doing something. That's what the phones are taking away, is the ability to just sit there like this. That's being a person, right?
Yes.
No one can, you got to check. Because, underneath everything in your life, there's that thing, that empty, forever empty. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes,
just that knowledge that it's all for nothing and you're alone. You know, it's down there. And sometimes when things clear away, you're not watching it, you're in your car, and you start going, oh, no, here it comes, that I'm alone, like it starts to visit on you. You know, just the sadness.
Yes.
Life is tremendously sad just by, being in it. And so you're driving, and then you go, that's why we text and drive. I look around, pretty much 100% of people driving are texting.
Yes.
And they're killing, everybody's murdering each other with their cars.
Yes.
But people are willing to risk taking a life and ruining their own because they don't want to be alone for a second because it's so hard.
So he's a little more nihilistic than I would be, but there is something we find in that space when we're alone. Another adolescent said, I miss those times when I would just sit in my thoughts and then I'd start to write some of the ideas that would come in those times. Bonhoeffer puts it this way, let him who cannot be alone be aware of community. Let him who is not in community beware of being alone. Each one has pitfalls and perils. The one who wants his fellowship without solitude plunges into the void of words and feelings. And the one who seeks solitude without fellowship perishes into the abyss of vanity, self-infatuation, and despair. And then finally, we need to worship God in the way, glorify God in the way we utilize our talents. Offer your iPhones as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Don't be conformed by the pattern of the matrix, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. So hopefully that gives you a framework to now start to address those, but Mom, why? And we can have some better conversations with them besides, because I said so. And don't go, because Walter said so. Don't throw me under the bus. You can throw me under the bus if you want. Just a couple quick sites and apps you perhaps need to know about. I don't have time to go into all of them. There's billions of them out there, but I can give you some broad categories. First is Instagram. We know Instagram. Your child gets an account, starts following others. They start following them. They post onto our account. Other users comment or like a picture, and they repeat that 87 times a day. Right? And my daughters, who are 14 and 16, now 17 as of 3 days ago, will check and see how many likes did my photo get. And they're like, oh, that's kind of fun. That's kind of cool. But here's one of the problems, especially when it comes to adolescent girls, is when you look at the number of likes that they come up with, what has happened is now popularity is measurable. We can assign a number to how popular I am. And that saddens me. I remember the amount of rejoicing there was in our home when her first photo got 100 likes. And just, you know, you're happy and kind of sad because now there is this actual number. And then you'll see students begging for followers, that which is a whole other sermon for another time as well. Comment, likes, followers, please. You have students begging for people to follow, which I think reveals something significant. Yik Yak is one of these location-aware areas where you can post something completely anonymous. And this is where I want to talk about the difference between private spaces and anonymous spaces. The older that our students get, the more need they have for levels of privacy, right? So, give you a vivid illustration. When my daughters are 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years, it's appropriate for me to give them a bath, right? My daughters are 16, 17. It would not be appropriate for me to give them a bath, right? They have needs for privacy, not only when it comes to their own modesty, but when it comes to parts of their own life. They need their own spaces for that privacy. It's with apps like Yik Yak, though, where an anonymity breeds a whole different level, where I can say whatever I want about whoever I want. And this is just one snapshot. It's going to be a whole lot more foul than that. Lots of schools have caught on to this one, and they put geofences up around. That's just one of those types of apps when it comes to anonymous that we have to ask a question about. Keek is kind of a Snapchat for video. I'll talk about Snapchat in a second. It's rated 17 in the App Store because what you'll see is kind of in some of the reviews and the comments, it's clear that people are kind of trolling for nude pictures of one another. And again, it's an anonymous place. It's another one of those anonymous places. Snapchat, we've heard lots about Snapchat. My daughters have Snapchat. You're a Bible teacher. You let your kids, because what we've seen happen with their friend group is they've used this as a way to connect with just their friends. They're not using it to send sext and nude pictures to creepy old guys out there. They do this to just send stupid pictures to their friends that they don't have to see again. And it's been more of one of those private spaces rather than having an anonymous space. And so they've used that in a situation, you know, to just be anonymous with their friends and fly under the cover. Now, would I let my 12, 13-year-old kid do that? Probably not. And we can talk about ages and have a Q&A time on Friday where we talk about some of these kinds of things. But they proved a certain level of maturity with their use of media, texting, social media, when they turn 15 that we let them do that. And we still monitor that from time to time. It does get the illusion that you won't ever have to see that photo again, and there's plenty of apps out there that can still take screenshots of those apps and stuff. So still we need to train and teach our students that even though it says that it self-destructs, it doesn't necessarily self-destruct. Wicker, again, is another one of those self-destructing messages of anonymity. Ask.fm is a place to kind of do Q&As anonymously out there. Interesting article I read about this recently is some of the self-deprecating stuff have been written by the person who actually asked the question in the first place. So Jack will put a question out there. Hey, what do you guys think about Jack? And then Jack will then go back under another username and say, Jack's a big jerk. I hate Jack for this reason. Really interesting psychology of what's going on there in some of those spaces as well. And then lastly is just, our second to last is this idea of child pornography. So that's a really interesting discussion with the Williamson County, where I live, district attorney. And she says, look, when we get a photo that comes, a mom brings in a photo or a photo across our desk, we have to research it. We don't know if this is really kind of pornography or not pornography. If you sexed with somebody under 18, you're engaged in the legal system. And the way she defined it was taking a picture of the parts of your body that a bathing suit would normally cover and sending it. And she said, it's kind of a big deal. So she's like, would you want to have a conversation with your son or daughter where I'm sitting across one side of the table and I slide the phone over to your folks and show them the photo and say, help me understand what's going on? They have to do that to protect our kids and to understand what's going on. Now, here's the deal. She says, if you take the photo, you are creating pornography. It's the way our legal system looks at it. If you send it to somebody else, you are now a distributor of pornography. And if you send it across state lines, that gets into some federal issues. And lastly, if you keep it on your phone for a certain amount of time, you are in possession of child pornography. So that's how the law looks at it. Those are some of the ways that our students are becoming educated in, but they still haven't fully, I think, learned. Now, here's the really interesting. A mom asked the DA this question. She said, well, what if my son gets a photo on his phone that he didn't ask for? She says, that's a really good question. She says, we have this box that we'll hook the phone up to, this black box, and we can tell how long he looked at it and what he did with it, if he sent it to someone else or if he kept it on his phone, like about Big Brother. That should kind of freak us out. So there's that. And lastly is this thing called the Pirate Bay. There's all sorts of different sites out there. It's called torrenting, BitTorrent. BitTorrent's a fancy term for taking really large files and putting them up on the internet, large files like movies and software titles and those kinds of things. And I can put a movie title up there, and Jacob can download it pretty quickly, because what happens is he actually downloads it because of all of you have downloaded it too, and he's sharing all of your bandwidth. You don't need to know that. But this kind of lets you know. So here's a quick demo where I type in the piratebay.se, I look up and I'll go, well, show me the top 100 video or audio porns out there, movies. Show me the top 100 movies out there. And then all of a sudden, boom, you can see kind of all these movies you can get just like that. Sorry for teaching you how to do that, but that's when you come across torrents or torrent files, that's where some of these BitTorrent apps come under play. I can't tell you all the BitTorrent apps. These are some of the more famous ones or more popular ones out there. So if you come across a son or daughter who has all that stuff, that's one of those things. NetLingo is one of those areas where you, if you look at your students' texts or email and don't have any idea what BRB, LOL, or any of that kind of stuff means, you can text it into NetLingo and actually tell you. So LOL, I learned this, AOLL is actually laughing out loud. So if we're Christian and you do actually laugh out loud, then please type A-L-L-O. But there needs to be N-R-L-O-L, we're not really laughing out loud, but saying I'm laughing out loud to appease your conscience. Anyway, so that's just some of the kind of the ground floor apps out there. When we get together tomorrow, Jack and I are going to be talking about some practices that you can engage in with your youth ministries to redeem technology. Because, again, we don't want to throw technology out there, but we do want to help navigate this with our students and help teach them how to go through technology that way. When we get together on Friday, I'm going to give you a whole bunch of tools that you can use to help, I'm going to put it in quotes, safeguard our kids. We can't fully safeguard them. I remember I have an in-law who, when we went to her home, she had this puffy little wrapper around her coffee table. And I was like, that's sweet. That's wonderful. The kid's going to fall into the cabinet over there instead. You know, we have this idea of safety, and we're going to talk about not only those guardrails that we can put up for students, but how do we use those guardrails? And so we're going to get really, really practical. Today we spent a lot of time at 30,000 feet. We're going to get down to some brass tacks and then give you a chance to do some Q&A. Like I said, if you want a comprehensive list of stuff, you can click on this link, and that'll take you to my website. And I've got a link there that I put together in kind of a list of articles and books and those kinds of things that you can search for at your leisure. It's serdaki.net. If you're looking for that, it's that, Parenting Through Tech Issues right there, some resources for you there. Yes?
What was your website again?
Serdaki.net.
Where's that?
It's not on there, but my name's there.
Serdaki with a Z?
S-U-R-D-A-C-K. It should be at the bottom of the sheet, the handout. Yeah, Amy.
So the thing with the movie is that's illegal.
It is illegal. Yeah, and you will get cease and desist letters from your cable provider, and you're the one who's on the hook for it because you provided the pipe. So, yeah. And I can stick around here. I'll stick around here, answer whatever you want. Thank you, everybody, and hopefully see you in the next couple days.